You are Locked On Raptors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey, how's it going? Welcome to episode number 275 of Locked On Raptors for Thursday, February 8th. I'm your host, Sean Woodley of LockedOnRaptors.com and RaptorsHQ.com. You can find me on Twitter at WoodleySean, at WoodleySean. I should know my own Twitter handle. And the show is at Locked On Raptors. You can find links to every single episode. You can also check out the Locked On Podcast Network, which you should definitely do today, seeing as it's the trade deadline and lots of stuff happened around the league. If you want to hear about the Sheldon Mack trade from both local perspectives, listen to Locked On Hawks and Locked On Wizards, for example, or other trades that happened as well. Make sure you find them. And if you find a host or a show that you dig, if it's the first time you're checking them out because it's the deadline, make sure you subscribe to that show separately. You can do it with us. You can find Locked On Raptors on iTunes. Leave a rating. Leave a review. It's the easiest way to help out the show. Show that you care. Make us more popular. Boost my ego. All that good stuff. Takes no time at all. It's free to do. And it really, really helps out and makes me feel good. So thanks in advance for doing that. All right, on today's show, I'm joined by our favorite amateur chef, frequent guest on the podcast. It's John Gotis. How's it going, man?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm great. What did you make for the Super Bowl?
I made homemade wings, buffalo chicken, as one does, and paleo jalapeno poppers.
That sounds probably not bad at all.
It was pretty good. They were pretty close to the real thing. No cheese. That's the difference.
Okay.
You make this weird, like, scientific cashew mix that, like, approximates the taste of cheese. And, it worked out.
Actually, there's a spot in Hamilton called Green Smoothie Bar. Free advertising for those guys. They go all dairy-free. They're vegan, essentially, there. And you can get cashew sour cream if you get, like, a chili or something like that from them. Cashew sour cream, which is pretty tasty. So I'm familiar with the... Like, sorry, go ahead.
You can get it, of course. It's like a cashew cream cheese. It's like $11 for, like a wheel thing. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Well, I'm glad you made good stuff for the Super Bowl. I made chili. That was pretty good. I mean, it's classic. It's not very creative, but it was good-ass chili. And I still have some that I've been eating all week. I've eaten one thing all week. It's been great. We can talk about food another time, though, because it's trade deadline day, and stuff happened that either directly affects the Raptors or loosely, sort of tangentially affects the Raptors or doesn't affect the Raptors at all. We're only going to talk about the first two things. We're going to talk about the Bruno Caboclo trade. We'll talk about the Cavs and what they did and how that sort of changes the structure of the East and our hope that the Raptors can potentially make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. I'll talk about elsewhere in the East as well and whether or not anyone did anything, which they didn't really do anything, but we'll talk about that anyway and sort of the ramifications of that. Talk about bio guys, but I guess we should start with our dearly departed, beautiful, milk-loving boy, Bruno Caboclo, who is off to Sacramento only to be unceremoniously waived by the monsters in Sacramento because, you know, why would the Kings need a young project player? Crazy, right? Malachi Richardson come back the other way from the Sacramento Kings. He is a unseasoned player who had a nice tournament for Syracuse and went to the Final Four kind of unexpectedly as an 11 seed and then hasn't done much since coming to the NBA. He was supposed to be a shooter. He's shooting about 29% from three over the course of his career. Obviously, this is the Kings and their development system, so who knows where they could have led him astray. He's probably going to play in the 905 a whole bunch. Not really room for him on the roster. The big thing, I think, for the Raptors' purpose is that it saves about $1 million underneath the luxury tax. So if the Raptors want to go out and try to sign a buyout guy, there's a little extra money to work with there as well. Original thoughts on the trade. My biggest reaction was that I was shocked and very kind of, it hit me kind of hard and harder than I would have expected. But what was your initial reaction to the Bruno trade?
Yeah, I don't have a lot of thought on it. I think that... Yeah, it's a back end of the roster guy. It's not really an impact deal, obviously. I'm not as attached to Bruno as I guess some people are. I've been kind of out on him for the last year or so. But he's been a great piece, I think, for the 905 and been a lot of the reason why they've been successful. So that might throw a little wrench into what they're trying to do. But I think Malachi Richardson could be a good player. He probably has a better high end and or maybe a more trustworthy high end than Bruno does. But either way, I don't think either of those guys were going to make a difference this year or next year. I think it's just people you want in the system. I like Malachi from, like, you know, the prototypical Masai Ujiri type player. He's a big wing, Syracuse player. He kind of knows the X's and O's of defense. And theoretically, he's a shooter, but that hasn't panned out in the NBA. So I'm curious to see what he looks like with the G League, because maybe he becomes something at some point.
Yeah, I think, he's only in the second year of his deal, so if you kind of throw him into the pipeline and try to work with him, maybe not by next season, but the season after that, maybe you have an actual rotation player there. And it's kind of like a bonus, it's like a bonus first-round pick, because he hasn't really performed like the mid-first-round pick that he was, but it is kind of like an extra little, boost to the prospect system, especially when, you don't have a first-round pick coming this season, and you're out a couple second-round picks as well for trades that you've made, and just a little way to replenish the pipeline a bit, especially when, Bruno was coming up to the end of his deal, so obviously that was never going to be a thing you were going to turn into, like, back-of-the-roster help. And, DeLon Wright's going to get paid pretty soon, and Jakob Poeltl, Pascal Siakam are the same year as Richardson, but they're not far behind, of course, so... I think it's a smart move for the Raptors to sort of cash in on the Bruno experiment and get what you could for it, I suppose. And if Malachi Richardson becomes anything, even like the slightest rotation player, then you can actually kind of sell yourself on the whole Bruno thing being a success, because you get a average or below average rotation player to the 20th overall pick. That's totally fine. But yeah, I'm bummed just because the idea of Bruno was always so fun, and like he's been pretty good in the G League this season. He's had a more expanded role. He's averaging 14 points a game, 6.5 boards. His defense has been excellent, 1.6 blocks. And he's kind of taken over a bigger role with that team. He's not shooting particularly well, but defense was always kind of more of his calling card anyway. It was always kind of the thing that, like, when you'd watch little glimpses of him in preseason, it was like, oh, hey, this dude, like, kind of just defends well by default because he's 7'8" long in the arms, and it's just, like, it's impossible to get around him, and he can kind of poke balls free. I hope he lands on his feet somewhere. I'm sure a G League team will scoop him up at some point because he's been so good on that level for the last couple of seasons. G League Finals, MVP last year and everything like that, too, so... It would make sense for a team to pick him up. But yeah, it's kind of a bummer. It was always fun to wish on that. And the 2 years away from being 2 years away jokes got incredibly tired and not funny, about a minute into the experience. But I don't know. It's kind of a somber... I mean, I guess you said you're kind of moved past it anyway. But like the idea was always kind of tantalizing. Just like the idea that you find this dude who's like barely played basketball and throw him into... an NBA development system to see what you can do. And like, while he didn't make the NBA, like they obviously turned this guy into something of a professional basketball player, whether or not he goes and makes money over in Europe or something playing over there. Like he can actually play professional basketball at a reasonably high level, which, it's not the success that you want, but it's still something. Like from what he was in his first season, this dude who just like didn't seem to know where to stand on a basketball court. Like there is some sort of progression that was made with him. And I guess you have to credit the Raptors, development staff with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he was just on a different projection than what his contract was going to be. At some point, he was going to need to get a new contract from the team, and I think he just didn't progress fast enough to earn it. So, yeah, I think that he was fun because you kind of got that quarter from him back with the Milwaukee game.
Hell yeah!
And you got that kind of fun dig about the 2 years away being 2 years away. So you kind of knew who Bruno was. Just from those kind of two moments, and it kind of gave him a different bit of a flavor, because usually with these guys in the 13th and 14th spot, you don't really know them that well. You don't really know their game. You have to pay pretty close attention to this team to know kind of what Alphonso McKinney does, or maybe even what Lorenzo Brown does on the basketball court, or Malcolm Miller. Just because you had those two moments with Bruno, I think it just kind of made him a bit more fun and a little bit easier to root for. He was a social media phenom for like 2 years there. And then he kind of went away, which kind of bummed me out. But yeah, he was a fun player. He was a fun guy to have on the team. And I think it just added a different dimension of fandom for being a Raptors fan, because you kind of had this guy you could always root for. And that's not necessarily the case anymore. We can kind of move that over to Bebe, assuming he's staying here for somewhat long term. But yeah, you kind of lose that bit of fun.
Yeah, having a human victory cigar is pretty fun.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure who that is anymore. It might be Norman Powell, which is depressing as hell. But, yeah, it's farewell, Bruno. I'll probably write a little post about Bruno coming up on Locked on Raptors at some point. There were fun moments. People forget that he had that game where he scored 11 points, his career high, in the final game against the Cavs last season, a game in which Jonas Valanciunas hit his first career three as well. People forget about that, but it was a magical moment as well for Bruno. Bruno's played 113 career NBA minutes. Do you think he adds any to that total over the course of the remainder of his career?
It's hard to say. It depends on which team he kind of lands on his feet with the G League. I think you're right. He's definitely going to be a strong player at that level. And because he's young, there's still that opportunity of him getting called up. It wasn't going to happen with the Raptors, and maybe it'll happen if it's a team kind of lower in the standings that wants to see what they have maybe late in the season. I think he'll probably add to it just in the next couple seasons. But after that, I can see him kind of becoming a player who gets stuck in that kind of circle of summer camps and summer league and the G League. So that's definitely a plane that he could end up on too.
I mean, the dude's 22. He's still so freaking young and obviously pretty new into actually playing basketball. And like, there'll be people who are like, oh, this was like a failure of the, like, obviously it was not a success, but I don't think it was like, it obviously didn't hurt the Raptors because they're sitting here 4 years after drafting Bruno with a first round pick and are sitting here with the deepest bench in the league built off of dudes that they drafted in the late first and second round or undrafted guys. So obviously it hasn't like hindered their ability to build the team. So I think when you have that, like you had that extra first round pick already in the bag from the Bargnani trade, I feel like to swing for the fences on a guy like this, it's an outside the box way of trying to go about building a player, and sort of trying to find a bit of a inefficiency, I guess, in terms of in the draft. And like, obviously, yeah, it didn't work, but I do kind of like that they made the experiment, and it obviously didn't hurt them, and they could totally afford to do it.
No, yeah, I don't think I would have gone back and, you know, revisionist history changed anything about that. I think he's a player who he's one of the best players on one of the best G League teams, and I think the only issue for him is he hasn't sped up to the game that he's playing at the level that he needs to be at. But the tools are there, obviously, and I think he'll get a chance. I mean, we're just seeing the news now that they're going to retain him in Sacramento, so he might get a chance there too. So,
oh, they are going to retain him.
In the air. They are going to keep him. That's what the news is.
Oh well, that's good. He's going to end up on like the Spurs or something and become good, and it's going to be frustrating as hell. But going from the 20th overall pick in the 2014 draft to the 22nd overall pick in that draft and other players, the Cleveland Cavaliers got Rodney Hood and a bunch of dudes, and it's annoying as hell. So what was, like, I was kind of working, so I didn't really get to like the in-between time between the original trade with the Lakers and then the second trade that sort of made everything kind of make sense. What was your sort of progression of thought over the course of the afternoon as you saw it was unfolding? Of course, the Cavs got Isaiah Thomas out of their goddamn faces, and also dealt Channing Frye and their own first-round pick to the Lakers for Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance Jr., which was a hilarious trade at the time. And then, of course, they made the three-way deal with the Jazz and the Kings, who are culpable and totally responsible for helping to prop up the Cavaliers, and it's really ridiculous. If you're going to complain about parity of small market teams, maybe don't just help boost up the team that's already very good. But hey, that's just me talking. And, of course, they got Rodney Hood and George Hill out of that for essentially dead weight and nothing in a second-round pick. So what was your sort of roller coaster of emotions watching what the Cavs are doing this afternoon?
Yeah, it was almost inevitable. It felt like going into the day that they were going to do something with Isaiah Thomas. I think, getting to your point, I think it's just which culpable team would take on that burden, because Thomas has just been so bad for them. And then it just kind of escalated, and it got to the point where they were just shedding pretty much every deadweight player. Basically, everybody who was miserable on the court, who was not happy to be there, basically every locker room cancer is out the door for this team. So no matter who they bring in, and they brought in good pieces, no matter who they brought in, just shedding that dead weight, I think, is tremendous for them. They retain Jeff Green, who's been playing well for them. I think Chetty Osman is deserving of a rotation spot, which I think he'll have now.
Yeah.
LeBron obviously gets help. They still have Tristan Thompson, and then pretty much all the deadweight guys who just looked, you know, miserable being there. Jay Crowder, Derrick Rose, Isaiah Thomas, Frye wasn't giving them anything. They just have a much better rotation, I think, just from an effort standpoint. And then when you add Rodney Hood, which you know, going to your point, I don't know what the Jazz are doing with this deal.
Like, the Jazz can make the playoffs. I don't understand, like, what Jay Crowder does for them that Rodney Hood didn't.
Yeah, I don't know. And watching Jay Crowder this year, I mean, maybe he'll try harder. Maybe that's the issue. But he and Isaiah just seemed like they came from Boston, were expecting one thing and just got another and just decided to check out. I mean, it was every game you'd see the vine or clip or whatever of, you know, some Crowder not helping his teammate up. It was, I don't remember who it was in the last game, but there's at least three out there. And I think it's just like it was a poisonous team. So it's good for them. I think they got... they have a new chance at chemistry here. They basically have a new rotation to work with, and whether that's going to work out for them in the short term, which they've got to get going pretty quickly here, it's still up in the air. But it's really good that they, you know, basically cleared house and are going to start fresh. I think they have pieces here to work with, and I think it was just an all-in play to kind of keep LeBron James in the building going into next year.
Yeah, it was really impressive for Kobe Altman to be able to do that after so much criticism of him, right? Like, oh, the Isaiah trade, the Kyrie trade was such a ridiculous loss for the Cavs, which that's not what people were saying in the offseason. People were saying, wow, the Celtics got fleeced, but obviously opinions change, and obviously the way it turned out was not very good for the Cavs. But yeah, I think just to unload all the dudes who were dragging everything down to, you know, kind of inject some youth into the lineup. So, like, even if LeBron ends up leaving, like, they're in a better place today than they would have been 24 hours ago, just in terms of like what it looks like going forward. They keep the Brooklyn pick, and they have to keep the Brooklyn pick now. And then you have Jordan Clarkson, who, I mean, we can get to the individual players and how good we think they are, but like, it's just like having young guys is better than having old guys who suck. And
yeah,
I think like just based on that, they got better. Even if like maybe the total upgrade in talent isn't like quite as amazing as people are making it out to be. So my progression of reactions over the course of the day was the first trade breaks, and I'm like, oh my God, LeBron's for sure leaving. Is LeBron getting traded to the Lakers now? Like, what's going on here? This is such a, like, why are they throwing in this first round pick? This is ridiculous. Jordan Clarkson's not very good. Larry Nance is like kind of whatever. Like, I'm not really all that impressed by him. He's a good dunker, cool. I don't know what he does.
Yeah, he's the one guy I think is going to be a fringe rotation player.
Yeah, like, I don't really know what he does.
I'm not really sure what he brings, because the other guys they all shoot, right?
Yeah,
like Hood, Hill, Clarkson, they can all shoot. So they'll be living off of LeBron's passes. But I'm not sure where Nance fits into the whole picture for them. So curious about that.
I'm interested in Nance as like a small ball five once Kevin Love is back, maybe. Sort of slide Love back to the four, have Nance maybe sort of do some rim protection stuff, but like, he's kind of undersized for that, and also, like, I don't know, like, it's hard to evaluate players on garbage teams, right?
Just like, it's impossible to know what he is. I think
it's kind of like the Elfrid Payton thing, which, goddamn it, the Suns stole him, man. Like, he's not bad, he's kind of good. And either way, we're not talking about the Suns either way. So after that deal happened, I was like, wow, this is looking good for the entire Eastern Conference. LeBron's going to leave. This trade makes no goddamn sense. And then I get Rodney Hood and George Hill for literally nothing. And I was just like kind of resigned to the fact, like, oh, okay, yeah. It was fun to think the Raptors had a chance to make it to the finals for a little while. Not happening anymore. And since then, I've kind of like scaled back my doom and gloom. Like, I think the Cavs are clearly the favorite still. George Hill... like, Raptors fans know exactly what he does in the playoffs. He's excellent, and I think he'll be kind of revitalized not playing for the Kings. You know, his health is another thing. Like, it's been up and down the last couple of seasons. And same with Rodney Hood. Like, Rodney Hood is very rarely totally healthy. Like, he's in and out of the lineup all the time. He's played 39 games this year, played like 55 last season. His health is a very sort of dicey proposition, so who knows if he'll even be around come playoff time. That'll be sort of a, you know, touch and go sort of thing with Rodney Hood, I think, over the course of the next little while. But I just think, looking at the roster, it's better, but I still think there are a lot of holes with this Cavs roster. Like, I think they're still a bad defensive team. Like, Jordan Clarkson's not a good defender. Larry Nance Jr., we've kind of talked about, like, he's whatever. He's kind of blah. Rodney Hood's never been, like, a great defender, and I feel like whatever good defensive reputation Rodney Hood has will kind of be wiped away when the guy behind him is Tristan Thompson and not Rudy freaking Gobert. And then, like, George Hill's an excellent defender, of course, but like, you went from a roster of having maybe one good defensive player in LeBron James when he actually tries to like two or three good defensive players, which I still don't think is all that much of an improvement. Where are you at with, like, how much of a favorite the Cavs should be in the East? Because if I'm handicapping it right now, before today I would have said, like, maybe the Cavs are like 40 to 45, maybe 50% favorites to make it through. And then if we're going on, like, you know, you run it 100 times in a simulator, I'd say the Cavs between 40 and 50. Raptors probably between 20 and 25. Same for Boston. And then, like, the Bucks or the Wizards that are kind of getting the scraps in the simulations, getting in 5 or 10 times or whatever. If you run the simulation 100 times now, after the deal has been made, after the deals have been made by the Cavs, like, what's the calculus there? How much has it changed?
Yeah, I agree. I think they're a better team than they were before all these deals. I think that defensively, you're right, there are still question marks and there are still weak points, I think, on the team. It's just J.R. Smith is still going to be the starting shooting guard, and he hasn't given them much of anything this year. So I think that's still a huge weakness point for them as far as, you know, attacking that in pick and rolls and trying to go after that from an opposition standpoint. But having warm bodies there, I think, around LeBron James just makes them a lot better. And like I said, they got rid of all the cancers out of the locker room. So just from an effort standpoint, I think they're going to thrive pretty well. But there's going to need to be some chemistry created, because I think there are fringe guys on this roster where you don't know. Like Jordan Clarkson, is he going to be able to take a step back and understand that he's not going to be a creator or be able to dribble for 5 to 6 seconds of the shot clock? Is he going to be okay to kind of step back and whether it's be a strictly a shooter or kind of jump into that Dwayne Wade creator role on the bench? He's got to change his game pretty significantly, and he hasn't shown to be a player who's lacking in ego. So that's a big question mark, I think, from a chemistry standpoint. But those guys that they got in the Jazz and Kings deal, I think, are just shoe-in improvements for them, because they're both guys who can shoot the ball. They're both okay defensively. Like you said, they have health issues. But I'm not too worried about them on the defensive end anymore, because you don't have that, you know, guaranteed deathly weak point in the Isaiah Thomas Kevin Love combination, which teams could just go after relentlessly and get free layups at the bucket.
Yeah.
They've shown the Cavs that they've been able to get over having, you know, JR on the court. They've been able to cover for him and be a good defensive team otherwise. But I think JR and Tristan Thompson as well have to be better and get back to the point that they were at, or the level they were at even last season, maybe not as high up as the year before, but those guys I think do need to be better, because they're going to be starting now, and teams are now going to look at them as the weak points as opposed to Thomas and Love.
So, like, to ask the question again, you've run it in a simulator 100 times. How many times is this Cavs team making it to the finals?
Oh, man, I don't know.
Obviously, it's hard to see until
seeing them. I mean, yeah. I would say probably a clean 50, because I think they are better. They have LeBron James, but it's going to come down a lot to seeding too. I think they, you know, the Raptors might not match up as well as they did with George Hill there, but it's tough. It's tough to say, because if they have to go through both those teams to get to the finals, Boston and Toronto, I don't know if they have enough to do that.
Yeah, I would say, as I mentioned, I had in between like 40 and 50 before. I would say I probably put it up to like 60, 65 probably, just because LeBron with not dead weight around him is really good, and there was just so much dead weight on that team that I think the improvement just by the addition by subtraction of Isaiah Thomas in particular is going to be huge. And you mentioned the advantage that Isaiah Thomas would have represented for a lot of teams if you came across the Cavs in the playoffs, like, that was kind of understated, I think, in terms of how much of a drop-off he was going to be from Kyrie Irving. Like, just a brutal defender who you can kind of attack, and, like, he's not as dangerous offensively when he has to play off-ball, and that's what he's doing. He's playing off-ball and waving for the ball 20 feet away from LeBron James every possession instead of actually sort of dictating the action by himself. And, like, that was going to be such a weak point, I think, for the Cavs defense, especially for a guy like Kyle Lowry or DeMar DeRozan, who have picked Isaiah Thomas apart with, you know, 1-2 pick and rolls and things like that over the past couple of years while he was with Boston. Like, that was an area where you could just be like, all right, we're going to attack this relentlessly until they do something else, and then throw in Jose Calderon or whoever else was their backup point guard. Like, that obviously is gone now. And, like, Calderon's still their backup point guard, and if George Hill's not healthy or whatever, or he's not back up to the level he was at last season with the Jazz and he's playing like he did with the Kings this season, then that's a different story. But I think there are way fewer readily attackable sort of weaknesses that you can kind of obviously see on this roster. Like, some will reveal themselves, and like Jordan Clarkson, I think you mentioned that he's always kind of been a score first kind of guy. Like, I feel like he could kind of have a mini version of the issues that Isaiah Thomas had this season, in that he won't be able to sort of dictate the offense. Like, he's not a good shooter either. So if you're hoping to have him sort of, you know, stand around and spot up around LeBron, like, he's not a good shooter. He's like a 32% three-point shooter over his career. So I'm not sure how effective that's going to be. And I think he can kind of have him sort of run into the same problems, unless, like you mentioned, he is just like the go-to guy in the second unit. He's playing without LeBron, because I'm not sure how effective he is. He's one of those guys that like kind of needs the ball in his hands, kind of like a Tyreek Evans or whatever. Like, they're really good and can be useful with the ball in the ball in their hands, but like when they're off the ball, it's like, what's even the point of this guy? Because he's not a good defender, not a good shooter. So like, what's the actual utility there? So yeah, I would say the Cavs are more favorites than they were, you know, 10 hours ago, but I still don't think it's a sure thing by any means. It's like, I would still take last season's Cavs over this team 100 times out of 100.
Yeah, and maybe this series of moves helps them kind of solidify into that third spot and hold off Washington, because I would say from a Raptors perspective, I think it's just a sign more than anything that they need to get up and go for the number one seed.
Yeah,
at all costs. I think that has to be the goal for the rest of the season, because irregardless of who it ends up being, whether the Cavs fall into the fourth spot or whether they don't, I think you just want to be secure in having home court, because they've been so damn good at home this year. Yeah. Like, and we don't talk about that enough. It's what, 22-4 now?
Yeah.
So you want to run everything through your house. And like I tweeted earlier today, they have, you know, the destiny's in their own hands. They got two more games against Boston, and they have the best schedule out of the teams competing for it. So they can go get it. Like, we're looking at the schedule here. They have seven games basically that are winnable up. Coming up here, starting tonight against New York. So they can really start ripping off like five-game win streaks or longer as we get through the rest of the schedule.
Yeah, that's how they kind of did it last year, or early in the season, where, you know, they were 8-6 after 14 games, and then they just went on like 3 six-game win streaks. The last month or so, there have been some letdown games, like that Jazz game or that Wizards game, where they've kind of like cut into their streaks. You kind of got to get rid of that, because Boston's not losing games at all because they're a bunch of tryhards, but and they're also very good. Like, they're a good team. And so that one seed, yeah, I'm totally with you. I think the Cavs probably have enough right now to stave off the Wizards. And like, the Wizards have been good without John Wall. I'm not sure how sustainable it is, because John Wall is their best player. So like, I'm not sure they're going to like keep up this. I'm probably more worried about the Bucks getting into the three seed than I am the Cavs, if we're looking at the seeding. This is going to be miserable, and it's absolutely going to end up that the Cavs are going to fall down to 4 on the last day of the season, and the Raptors will get 1 on the last day of the season, and it'll be, you know, meaningless anyway, because nothing matters. But it'll be fun to talk about, or agonizing to talk about, over the next 2 months. What's the Cavs' starting, like, optimal rotation, do you think? Go starting 5 and then like 9 deep on their roster.
Oh, does Basketball Reference even have their roster yet?
SpotTrack does.
It's so hard to keep track of.
I'm on their SpotTrack page right now, just with all their salaries.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Like, so my thinking is, Hill starts at point guard. You probably go... Like, I don't know if I would keep starting JR, because he's been so goddamn bad this season. I would probably start Hood at the 2. At the 3, do you go LeBron or do you go Chetty? And then you can go LeBron at the 4, and this is until Kevin Love gets back. I guess you start Thompson at the 5. When Love is back, it's probably Love. Do they just go back to Love Thompson?
I think they'll go back to Love Thompson. The 3 spot, I think, is going to be LeBron, and then the 2, I think, is the question mark. They probably keep JR there for the time being and have Hood come off the bench.
Yeah, maybe they start Jeff Green at the 4 until Love comes back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say that's probably likely. I think, like we said earlier, I think Jordan Clarkson is that scorer or different creator off the bench for them. Hood should probably be starting off the bench as kind of a secondary scorer. Hill, obviously, is the starter. But I think, I mentioned this off the top, but I think Chetty Osman is deserving of a rotation spot and should be getting more minutes. And I think the Cavs fans noted too, like last night's game, they were cheering every time he came in the game, booing Isaiah every time he came out, because Ty Lue was doing like the offense-defense switch every second possession, every opportunity he could, he was taking Isaiah out of the game.
Yeah.
And it was like boo and cheer every minute with those guys flipping. And Osman's pretty good. He's definitely a try-hard type player, and somebody they've definitely been lacking this season. He's not that skilled, but he tries really hard, which is good for them.
Yeah. So I guess we both kind of come off
to be on that team.
We both kind of come off the ledge, I guess, a little bit in the last few hours since these broke. Because like when it first happened, Raptors fans were kind of melting down. Like, oh well, the dream's over. I don't know if it's over. I think the Raptors are still excellent. They are significantly ahead of a lot of teams in terms of their net rating. They're almost 3 points up on the Celtics after that game on Tuesday. They went from being up 2.0 points to 2.9 in just one night, which is kind of funny. That was just a wonderful beatdown. Anyway, so I don't think it's a sure thing the Cavs make it. It's probably more sure than it was before, and LeBron is playoff LeBron, and he will be playoff LeBron every playoffs, and that gets exhausting, and who knows. We forget every year how good he is in the playoffs, so maybe none of this matters at all, but I still think there's some hope for the Raptors and even the Celtics, and like, I don't know, it's not against all odds that like a Bucks team could squeak in or something like that. Like, the East, I think, is more open than it has been. We say this every goddamn year, but like, I legit still think it is more open this season than it ever has been under LeBron's reign or whatever you want to call it. Let's move to the last thing before I let you go. The buyout guys. I don't know why we care about buyout guys. They never actually end up having that much of a tangible impact, but we talk about them. We sure do. Joe Johnson looks like he's going to get bought out by the Kings after that deal. He's been really bad this season. Chris Mannix said that the Warriors and the Celtics would be the early favorites for him. He wants to go to a contender. Any interest, if the Raptors were to reach out to Joe Johnson, would you have any interest in that?
I'm going to be pretty uniform in my answers here. I think the Raptors are probably okay to stand pat.
Yeah.
I've only signed Joe Johnson because he might sign with somebody that the Raptors are going to be playing.
Yeah.
Although the word is that Houston is the most interested right now.
That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be tough in the finals, but hey, well, worry about that when you get there, I suppose, if you're the Raptors. Who else is even going to get bought out? I guess, like, Brook Lopez, I hope he goes to the Pelicans if he gets bought out. And, like, it doesn't really feel like there's that many other, like, obvious candidates. Like, they've been talking all day, like, oh, the buyout market's going to be so strong. Like, what is one buyout player who you think is going to be, like, an actual upgrade for somebody?
Yeah, just looking at the list, I think Tyreke Evans is up there if they decide to part ways with him, because that was – they've been sitting him out. They obviously don't want to play him. They didn't trade him today, so –
Well, I feel like he'll come back in now. Like, what the fuck are the Grizzlies doing?
I have no idea. There's a lot of question marks with the back end of that Western Conference. Like, it felt like three or four teams just threw in the towel today and said, you know, screw it, we're just going to tank now.
Yeah. If Tyreke Evans gets bought out, that'll be kind of bullshit. Because he actually might be the one guy who's kind of affected, but at the same time, he's one of those Jordan Clarkson players where he's better on a bad team handling the ball as opposed to being like any sort of off-ball sort of threat or anything like that. Marco Bellinelli, sure.
That's the one guy who I've heard, you know, around the Raptors that there's been some, like, interest among fans to bring Bellinelli in, and that's one where I'm interested because I do think this team needs shooting.
Yeah.
But it's a thing where I don't really know what the cost is going to be, and I don't know how much wiggle room they have to bring somebody like that in, so I'm not intensely qualified. I would think it would be a good pickup, but I just don't know how that's going to work.
Yeah, I'm assuming it'd be like a minimum-style deal for a guy like that. Tony Allen's the other one. Like, they don't need another non-shooter. Boris Diaw would be fun, but I don't know really fit. Like, you're not playing Diaw at 35 years old ahead of, you know, Siakam or Poeltl at this point, I don't think.
Is he on a team? I thought he was playing in France.
No, his contract, like, the season ends soon, so apparently he's eligible to come back over. Like, it was, I don't know who it was. I think it might have been Shams or someone like that tweeted about that earlier today. Or Stein, saying to watch Diaw during the buyout season. But, like, none of these guys are, like... Again, the very robust buyout market. Like, none of these guys are even sort of interesting. So
yeah, you need a plug and play guy like Bellinelli because the bench is just so damn good and has such good chemistry that anything that's not, you know, standalone shooter is not going to help this team that much.
Yeah, the one, I guess, dream scenario is the Kings buy out Vince Carter, and you bring our boy home. But I don't know what he really provides at this point either. So. Buyouts are dumb. We care too much about it. It's never all that important. Like, I don't even think Greg Monroe is going to be that impactful for the Celtics. Like, he's not going to play important minutes for them because he can't defend anybody. and they're better when Al Horford's playing center. He's been the defensive player of the year, maybe playing center for a lot of that over the course of the season. So I don't know what the hell Greg Monroe's utility is there, aside from just taking minutes from Aaron Baines, who happens to have the best defensive rating on the team. So I don't know. We care too much about this stuff. Do you have any parting shots about the deadline before we wrap things up here?
No, I think it's just exciting to see what's going to happen now with the top of the Eastern Conference. I think it's just like Cleveland's obviously gone with like a total game changer. I'm happy the Raptors stood pat. Yeah. There was that kind of brief rumor about them being interested in DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah, what the hell is that? That couldn't have come from the Raptors.
No, and DeAndre's good, and I don't know how he would have moved the needle, though, with Jonas playing like he is. I'm really happy with this team. This team is really fun. Irregardless of what happens with the teams they're competing with, I think that it's really good that they stood pat and have a chance to just go for it here.
Yeah, I'm with you. And they can kind of have their cake and eat it, too, because they have been the second-best team in the East, arguably the best team in the East all season, and that's with playing Kyle Lowry like 32 minutes a game. So like they don't have to really sell out and like play Lowry 40 minutes a game to get the one seed. They can still, you know, because the Celtics still have West Coast road trips coming up. They have a harder schedule than the Raptors do down the stretch. They can still keep going with the model they've gone with, and just given the bench seemingly just keeps getting better week by week.
Yeah.
Fred VanVleet's just like dropping his nuts on the entire league right now. It's kind of nice that they can kind of maintain their sort of season long-term outlook by keeping Lowry rested, and even DeRozan to a certain extent. He's playing like 34 minutes a game without, and they can still get the one seed that they so desire. And if it comes down to the last five games and you really need to go balls to the wall for those five games to get the one seed, if you think it's that important, then they can do it because they've kind of reserved themselves for the most part of the season. So yeah, it's fun times. It's nice not having to have like trade deadline acquisitions to be the reason why your team sinks or swims. Like last season was fun in that they got PJ Tucker and Serge Ibaka, but had those deals not happened, it would have been a disaster and it would have been depressing as hell. And they were super necessary to sort of turn the season around after that awful January last year. So it's nice that everything is just coming up Raptors right now. Thanks for coming on, John. We're going to go watch the Raptors play the Knicks with six players or whoever the hell is playing for them. Michael Beasley's going to take like 40 shots tonight. And, I'm sure Luke Kornet will get in there as well, and Damian Dotson. Holy shit, this team is bad. Jarrett Jack will do some stuff. Kyle O'Quinn's going to play 48 minutes. Very excited for this one. Thanks for coming on. John, do you have anything you want to plug?
Doing the game coverage tonight for Raptors HQ, and then the new Raw Raptor rankings with some eulogy for Bruno probably in there going up tomorrow.
Fantastic. I'm going to write some sort of Bruno eulogy as well for LockedOnRaptors.com, so keep an eye out for that. It'll be nice and soft and mushy. You can also check out the thing I wrote yesterday for Raptors HQ, which Celtics fans really got angry about. I just wrote about how the Raptors are very clearly better than the Celtics in all different kinds of ways. Partly tongue-in-cheek, partly kind of built in fact. You decide for yourself. My favorite thing was the people who like followed me just to tweet at me about it. So that was fun. But yeah, check it out. It's fun. And the Raptors are good. And they're better than the Celtics. So read that at RaptorsHQ.com. You can also subscribe to, rate, and review the podcast on iTunes. Do all that stuff that I ask you to do all the damn time. It's very helpful. Makes me happy. Strokes my ego. All that good stuff. And thanks for tuning in. I'll be back again tomorrow, probably with another episode of Locked On Raptors, recapping the Knicks game, I guess. Might save an episode for like Saturday or something if the game tonight is not particularly interesting, which I'm not thinking it will be, but we'll see. But until the next time I talk to you, have a good one, everybody, and we will talk to you soon.